I'm so excited to have Ron Darling join us, a guy who pitched in the four-man rotation era, and get his sense on where the game is today and where it ought to be and what his thoughts on all these changes in the way pitchers are used. Here is from MLB Network, the former Met, Ron Darling. Hello, Ron. How are you?
Hi, Bob and Richard. Thank you for having me. I appreciate it.
Oh, it's great to have you on. I appreciate it. You pitched in an era, and this is a big thing for me. I've talked to I don't know how many baseball people about the four-man rotation versus the five-man rotation. You know, taking starters out in the fourth, fifth, sixth inning when they hit 100 pitches. You know, I grew up and came to love baseball in an era where guys like you pitched every fourth day, many times through many more than 100 pitches. I never saw anybody's arm come off. I'm not sure. I'm not sure that injuries are less prevalent today among pitchers than they were in your era or before that as a result of the new philosophies of starting pitching. What do you think?
Well, I think there's more injuries today than there ever have
Thank
been
you.
Before. And I think a lot of it is because you're training these young people, and you can't tell me that the elite pitchers that are out there, the Verlanders and Scherzers and Kershaws, et cetera, can't do exactly what was done 30, 40, 50 years ago. They have the body to do it. They have the mentality to do it. And they could do it if they were taught to do it. And what happens now is that in the minor leagues, not even the minor leagues, it starts probably in college, and then once they get to professional ball, they deem these young people so important financially that they're trying to protect them, but in trying to protect them, they're really hurting them. And how they're hurting them is that they're training them for a marathon by running sprints, and it's just not how you do it. It's not how it's ever been done. And I know that, you know, there's a lot of new ways to train athletes, but starting pitchers have always been the same. I remember when I played, we used to go on long-distance runs, very unusual for pitchers today to run long distances. And the reason we did it, not only to stay in shape, but we did it because long-distance running is just like pitching nine innings in a game. Hmm. You're very excited, or usually excited, when you start the game. There's some serious pain in the middle of it that is not so fun, and that's usually people on base or just physical pain from running the race. But this amazing euphoria you have if you complete the race or complete the game. And I've always felt it was a great kind of metaphor, running metaphor for pitching, is that the beginning, middle, and end of finishing a game is just like a long run.
So let me ask you this. We are clearly fascinated by two things in baseball today, the home run and the pitcher who can throw 95-plus. And if you can't throw 95-plus, boy, good luck, because your chances of getting to the major leagues are significantly less. I grant you, we didn't have a gun on pitchers. At least the public didn't know about guns on pitchers in the 1970s, 80s, even the early 90s, I guess. But is that part of the equation, too, this obsession with a guy who can throw hard and the teaching of throw as hard as you can for as long as you can?
Well, I think what happens in professional sports a lot of times is you just have to follow the money. And these players and coaches that coach these young players realize where the money is going to be spent. If you can throw 95 or more as a young amateur player, you're going to get that first round contract, which in today's dollars means $5, $6, $7 million. If you can hit the ball out of the ballpark, it's going to mean the same. The end result, though, is that you might be able to throw 95 miles an hour but not be able to pitch a lick. And you might be able to hit the ball out of the ballpark, but you might not be able to catch the ball at a position. Mm. The thing that makes it difficult, I think, and I think almost, it's almost criminal to me in a sense, is to put a gun on these young kids. And I've heard stories of kids that are 10, 12 years old throwing whatever they throw and going from game to game, throwing X amount one game and X minus one the next game, and having coaches ask them, what's wrong? Is there anything wrong with your arm? You didn't really have it today. To me, that's almost criminal to do to a young kid. But they also, what happens as you get older, in 15 or 16 or 17 or college, you know, lighting up that gun is the most important thing for you, more important than how many people you strike out, more important than learning the craft of getting people out, is that if you throw 95, you are guaranteed a payout, an initial payout. Then after that, it's up to you to see whether you're going to be excellent or not.
You know, I have a production company. We did a documentary on Tommy John surgeries. And one of the shocking things we found out is there are kids 14 and 15 years old who, at the either behest or with the approval of their parents, have Tommy John surgery, not because they have an injured arm, but because the perception is that after TJ, you can throw harder.
Yeah.
That is, and you used the word criminal, and I think it is criminal.
Yeah. Yeah, I've heard that. Well, I shouldn't say I've heard that. I know that as a fact. One, you're not assured of throwing harder after Tommy John surgery. I know a lot of times that it has happened is there's a false thinking that, replacing that ulnar collateral ligament is going to make that part around your elbow tighter and you'll have more durability. That's wrong, too. The issue is, if you have a child, his chances of pitching in the major leagues are almost nil, zero,
right.
None. So when you make these decisions, you shouldn't be making them on a decision where you think your child might be able to reap the benefits of a professional sport instead of just making the decision on their health as a human being as they move forward. That's the most important decision. And I know these decisions get made all the time. It makes me sick to my stomach every time I hear it. But there's a lot of money to be made, and some folks are swayed by that.
Ron, naturally in Toronto, we read a lot of insiders about the Blue Jays. We have our own opinions of the team, seeing them every day. You just saw this team for a couple days, so you can provide some insight with fresh eyes. When you look at Toronto, what do you see?
That's a great question. What I thought I was going to see before the season, I haven't seen yet, although I saw it yesterday with Jay Happ. I thought you guys would have some real outstanding pitching that would keep you in games. I thought you'd have a workman-like bullpen that could get the ball to Osuna. He has his own issues now. And that you would hit enough to make it work. I thought you were going to be challenged because of, Boston and New York certainly have really outstanding clubs. But from afar, I thought that the pitching was going to keep the team in it. So far, the pitching has struggled, the starting pitching especially. And the hitting has been just fine, as I saw yesterday with 12 runs crossing the plate. But I think the depth of the lineup that I saw in 15 and 16 when I saw them in the ALCS is just not there like it was before. And so, when you don't have that depth, you're probably not going to have the excellence that you had before when baseball came back to Toronto in a big way.
I don't know what the numbers say after Hap's start yesterday, but before that, Ron, the Blue Jays, I think, ranked either 28th or 29th, or maybe even last in baseball in terms of starters' ERA. And that is shocking to everybody because, like you, I think we all thought, well, this team will go as far as the starting pitching can take them, and the starting pitching will be good. It'll be among the best in Major League Baseball. There was every evidence to support that theory. How do at least four of the five starters plunge like this? Do you buy into the... the notion that if there's one guy in your rotation that pitches well, it motivates the next guy to pitch well, which motivates the next guy. Are you one of those?
Yeah, no, I'm not a believer in that. I think, each guy is responsible. This responsibility and accountability for your day, which is every fifth day. And I think that, if you get into a game where, boy, if so-and-so got hit hard yesterday, I'm going to have a hard day today, then you should be doing something else. I always thought that just really being responsible for your day and, if you're an excellent pitcher on your day, if you have your great stuff, you should win that game every time. If you don't have your A stuff but your B stuff, your team should win every time. And if you don't have good stuff at all, you find some way to keep your game team in it, so you give them a chance to win the game. That's what I always thought, you know, you should be thinking about, as opposed to zeros or thinking about ERA or XFIP or whatever you want to use, whatever numbers you want to use, the responsibility to the 24 other guys, because you only pitch every fifth day, is paramount to what you do as a starting pitcher. So I never take that excuse. I don't think it's a streaky thing where one starting pitcher is not pitching well and it affects the whole rotation. I think it's each individual is just not done their part.
Ron, I want to ask you a question about philosophy. When you were early in your career, Dwight Gooden's rookie year, I think he was either 19 or 20, so the Mets made the decision to bring up a guy that young, and obviously that was an incredibly memorable year. Vladimir Guerrero Jr. is killing the ball at AA.
Yeah.
He's 19. Philosophically, what are your thoughts about the potential of bringing up a 19-year-old position player right now?
Philosophically, my first thought would be I don't really need to see too much more. You know, there's just some kids that are prodigies that are ready to go, and sometimes it tends to be the son of former major leaguers. Ken Griffey Jr. was pretty good at 19 years old too.
Yeah, he was.
Because they've been around big leaguers their whole life. It's just they don't know anything else. They're not afraid of that stage. That being said, you know, your team is struggling. Is it as important to bring him up to change the team so it's not struggling, or it doesn't matter? It's going to be hard for him to change really the culture of where you're going this season. I don't know the answer to that question. I just think that you know, there's just special people, and I try not to hold age against the player. I think that organizations certainly are weary of doing that. But I try not to hold against them because, you know, there's Yo-Yo Ma's out there and others that are just they're just different folks and ready to go when they're ready to go. And Junior seems to be that kind of player to me now. I can totally understand the conservative nature of an organization with a 19-year-old player. Certainly can understand that. But I saw it happen with my own two eyes. The first 2 years that Dwight had in the major leagues, he was the best pitcher in baseball. The best. No one close. And maybe Junior can do that too.
Well, I think I agree with you 100% from the standpoint that baseball has been guilty for a long time of trying to put every round peg in a square hole, to say that everybody should progress in if not an identical way, then a similar way to others, and that the risk of bringing a 19-year-old up is too great. And I continually say, well, show me the evidence of that. I mean, yeah, there are 19-year-olds who won't make it, but how do you know that they would have made it if you'd waited until they were 21 or 22 to bring them up? And then, as you say, you look at Gooden and you look at Griffey Jr. and you say, well, there you go, two teenagers. And they, I mean, these were extraordinarily talented players who achieved success virtually immediately when they got to the major leagues at the age of 19. And Guerrero, by the way, yeah, go ahead. Yeah. Go ahead.
No, I was just going to say, sorry I interrupted you, but they're extraordinary cases.
Yeah.
You know, I mean, 99.9% of the 19-year-olds you have in your system have no chance of playing in the major leagues. But these are just extraordinary cases.
Yeah.
And I think that you should be open-minded enough to think about it.
Here's something to ponder. Guerrero yesterday raised his batting average to .415. Like, that's hard to, you think, 38 games in.
That's right.
That's hard to do.
Yeah, that's
your bet. He had four hits yesterday, and his batting average went up to .415.
Yeah, you're in George Sisler territory there. One quick one for me, Ron. You work with Keith Hernandez on Sportsnet New York, and Keith Hernandez in the last 3 months, Ron, as you know, has become a social media star, a darling of Twitter.
You pardon the expression.
Yeah, I wonder, Ron.
Yeah, don't use that word, please.
Yeah, there you go. Well done. I wonder, what do you make of this? I mean, Keith is getting profiles in the New York Times, not necessarily about Keith himself, but about his star turn on Twitter, his how much people love his pet cat. This is crazy, I think, but fascinating.
Well, I think one thing I just want to make clear, the person on social media today is not the player I played with 32 years ago. They're two different people. I think what's interesting and interesting about social media is that, I would say this to Keith, I don't think he entirely knows what he's doing, but it works. And I think that's the strangest thing about social media, is that you can have someone who is trying to brand their name and is paying a PR person to make sure that they're, you know, invited to all the right parties and saying the right thing and putting it on, and it doesn't work. And Keith just haphazardly on a Tuesday decided to get on because he's got a book coming out and wanted to make sure that he maxed out to people that would know that he had a book. And the next thing you know, the cat becomes a sensation. So, one, we know that there's a lot of cat people out there, I found out from social media with Keith. And two, one of the great things about Keith is that he is probably the most original person I've ever met. You know, all of us are products of whatever, how we were raised, where we were raised, whatever. But Keith is just a very original person, original thinker, and I think that's part of his great charm on social media.
One more from me before we let you go. We appreciate your time. You got a chance to watch Matt Harvey a lot. He's now found a home in Cincinnati. What do you think the chances are of him figuring it out again?
I think it's up to him. And I say it this way. You know, if you look at the physical gifts that he still has after two major surgeries, in 1992, I think I won 15 games for the Oakland A's. I maybe had a third of what he's got right now, his physical gifts. So the physical gifts he has, he can make it work. But he's got to be open-minded, I think, enough to be able to, throw in the closet who he used to be open-minded enough to change, to open himself up to the analytics of the game in the sense that what are guys hitting, what are they not hitting, where to attack hitters, et cetera, et cetera. And if he does that, and that's a lot of ifs, you know, if he does that, then he has a chance. Now, you know, he's been his own worst enemy.
You bet.
In his own, and that should not be discounted. So he would have to clean that up in a major way and make baseball his number one priority. And if that all those things happen, I think he could find great success in his latter years as a professional athlete. And I honestly root for everybody. It's a really hard game. You can get mad at folks because they disappoint you, but you're always optimistic and you hope the best. Well, I hope the best for anyone that tries to take on this game.
Well, well said. I mean, his worst enemy is the thing between his ears and maybe the thing beating in his chest from time to time. And if he can figure that out, then I'm with you. He's got the talent. There's no question about that. Ron Darling can be heard on Sportsnet New York. You can watch him on the MLB Network throughout the season. MLB will feature the Cubs and Jose Bautista and the Atlanta Braves tonight at 7:30. Ron, it's good of you to take time for us. We appreciate it a lot.
Well, I wanted to say one last thing, and I'm not pandering, but when we go into a town after an off day, I always fly in the day of the game if it's short enough. And the Mets are coming to Toronto later in the year. I'm flying out on the off day on Monday with my producer because we love your town so much and we want to have a Toronto evening with a beautiful dinner and a stroll through downtown. So only Toronto gets us to fly on an off day.
Well, thank you very much for that on behalf of everybody in Toronto and I'm sure the mayor, too, who's most appreciative of the promotion.
Right.
Thanks, Ron.
Thanks, guys.